Here's the clerk. There's a preliminary issue that I would like to address, only because it was raised in the dissent, the opinion below. And the dissent was of the opinion, or is of the opinion, that the case should be compensable. However, it raised the issue of jurisdiction on this matter. And and the case that it cited is a case, Perrymore. And under Perrymore, it's a case that involves extra territorial jurisdiction, which meaning whether a compensation court can exercise jurisdiction over an accident that occurred outside of this state. And I would simply state that under my analysis, that is not the proper jurisdictional question. The only jurisdictional question is whether the claimant was in the course and scope of his employment when the accident happened within the jurisdiction of Colorado. So, and I guess more accurately would be in the quasi course of his employment when the accident occurred in Colorado, and therefore the analysis of extraterritorial jurisdiction doesn't apply. I will now go to the merits of the case. We have raised the issue that the court was that the ALJ was incorrect in finding that there was no benefit conferred upon the employer by having its employees travel to each new employment site, job site. And we have cited that there is an admission by the supervisor that he did invite all of his employees, an open invitation to follow the job, to follow the employer from job to job. And this is an the record reflects that this is an employee that had worked for Jomax, the employer, for approximately 2 years, following the employer from job site to job site to a couple of places in Wyoming, to Greeley, in the last 6 months of his employment in Colorado, to Carbondale. And what we're saying that the employee witness testified that he did benefit from employing workers who had experience working for the company. That was an admission. It was the only testimony adduced on the issue of benefit. And so the court found that there was no benefit to employing the claimant. However, that is contradicted by the supervisor, who admitted that he did benefit from hiring its former employees.
Are you saying that he specifically testified that there was a benefit, or that he just extended the invitation and therefore you would assume that there's a benefit?
No. There was testimony that he extended the invitation. They posted the new job site after the termination of each job site work. And I asked on my cross specifically, did Jomax benefit from hiring employees with experience with the company? And the response was yes. So what I'm saying is that there is a specific, the testimony was not found incredible by the ALJ. So this is not an issue where you are free to dismiss or accept. The court, the ALJ did not address the admission by the employer that there was a benefit.
But there were other circumstances, though, that the ALJ could have credited that would indicate there was no benefit. For example, there were plenty of workers in the new location, and that they're who had the necessary skills, etc.
It was the fact that there were plenty of workers. There were over 70 workers that were applying for the same position. There were over 200. There were 220 workers who were applying for the unskilled position, and the claimant as a former employee was hired because of the benefit, one would infer. And he was one of 70 employees or 80 employees hired for the position. So not only do you invite them to follow the job, but you also give them preference.
But let me ask you this question. That it looks like if there was a benefit, you could argue that that was going from Colorado to Carthage. But once the employment ended in Carthage, there was no guarantee that this worker was going to be employed by the company in the future.
And Your Honor, the whole issue can be short. There's a shortcut to the issue, to the response to the issue, which the dissent found. The dissent was not interested in whether that he was in the scope of his employment from Colorado to Carthage, because nothing happened.
Right.
But he did say that once he arrived in Texas, then he was on travel status. And the only thing that we have for travel status is a per diem. So why don't I just stop arguing the coverage from Colorado to Texas and simply concentrate on the issue as to whether he ever became a travel employee.
Okay, here's my question. Once the job ended in Carthage, and then he was no longer on a per diem at the time he was traveling back to Colorado, right?
Well, that's because the law, it's legion that once you become a travel employee, the risks of travel shift to the employer, and the travel status does not end until you get back home.
So if this worker had decided he liked Carthage and wanted to accept some temporary employment and stay there an additional 2 weeks, at which point he decided then to go back to Colorado, he's still on travel status with the first company? With
I don't know that I would have taken that case, but there is no break. There's a three-day break between the termination of the employment and the accident in Colorado. So there's no issue on the record that he waited a couple of days to get his transportation to come back to Colorado. So the issue then becomes, if he ever became, and that's really my argument on appeal, I think I sort of conceded whether he was an employee on travel status between Colorado and the and Carthage, because I think they do a pretty good job of saying, we're going to terminate you, we're not going to hire you, you can come back, maybe we'll hire you, etc. So they have an argument to say that that he wasn't an employee from Colorado to Texas. But because of the per diem, and there's no question to go around the per diem, there are no contradictory supporting evidence to support the finding that the per diem was for travel expenses. It's an admission on the record by the same supervisor who said he was paying travel expenses. There's a very weak argument, counter argument that's made in Apple's brief, and that counter argument states that, wait a minute, he got paid a per diem back in Colorado, and he wasn't traveling then. And that's very weak for the following reason. The testimony of the claimant is that he worked for a couple of years, and he was specifically, the claimant testified that he worked in Gillette, in Douglas, in Carbondale, and Wheelie. But he lived in Delta. There's no testimony that he ever worked in Delta or near Delta. So the distance one way between Delta and Gillette is 510 miles, and I think that the court can take judicial notice from a Google map, as I did. Also, Evanston is 400 miles. Greeley is 240 miles. And lastly, the closest place to Delta was Carbondale. And Carbondale is only 87 miles. But according to his testimony, he would go to the Carbondale location, and then he would be transported further to go work. And throughout his employment, it's not disputed, he got paid a per diem.
Let me ask this question, though. He's in Carthage. Mm-hmm. This is where I'm having a hard time understanding why he's on travel status. He's in Carthage. The job is over. They say, okay, this job's done. We're no longer paying you a per diem. You can go wherever you wish. So he wants to go back home to Colorado. But at that point, why is he on travel status if the job is ended?
I repeat, because the case law is very clear that if travel status is triggered, and it's our argument, you cannot defeat a travel status claim by merely saying you were terminated, you're no longer on the job, we're no longer paying you. Because the case law says that once you trigger travel status, meaning you're away from home traveling, it doesn't end until you get home.
How long does that last?
Unless there is a substantial deviation from your travel back home.
Mr. Martinez.
There is a substantial deviation in this case.
Okay, so you're saying once travel status is triggered, what ends travel status?
It does not end until you return home, and we cite the authorities, unless there is a substantial deviation. Instead of going home, you stop. The cases are full of that. When you stop, you drank, you ate, and then the question becomes: did you return to your travel status, or did you was the deviation so substantial, the 2-year employment, that you're no longer on travel status?
Do those cases presuppose, though, that there is continuing employment with that employer?
Oh no, no. The issue of employment has never been an issue. The single issue to see whether you're in the course and scope of your employment is whether you were returning home, or whether there has been a substantial deviation. So sometimes it's not returning home. Sometimes it's going shopping instead of going home, or sometimes it could be.
Mr. Martinez, do you have a case that says that the employment's terminated, but that there's kind of a residual travel status in order to get the employee home? Do you have any case that stands for that?
No, I have a legion of cases that simply say that once travel status is achieved, it does not end until you return home. Unless there's a substantial deviation.
And in all those cases, the employment still is maintained, though, correct?
It is not addressed.
Okay.
It's not addressed because. My argument is that you can't simply fire the employer or terminate the employer, as in this case, lay them off. And so you're going to have to they said you have to reapply it every time. And I think that their argument is that we're terminating the employee. He has to apply again. There's no guarantee. I think that buys them a lot of defense for injuries that occur on the way to work. But once you hire them and once you pay the per diem as they admitted on the record, to compensate for travel expenses, then you can't just simply terminate them and take the position that you have no responsibility for what the law says is your risk as an employer. Once you get them to travel, then the risks of travel shift to the employer, and you can't get rid of them simply by saying that we terminated your employment. There is no case that would support that decision. There are only cases that support the rule that if they were employed, then it does the travel status does not, if they were employed as travel employees, the travel status does not end until you get home, unless there is a substantial deviation. And the 2-week employment, I think, would be a substantial deviation, Your Honor. Or a vacation somewhere else. I'll reserve my time.
Sorry. Steven Spahr on behalf of the respondents, Your Honors. If I may. Yeah, I think you focused in real well on what the issue is here and the, whether or not travel status applies in this case. I want to preface my remarks briefly with responding initially to jurisdiction. I don't think that's an issue. It wasn't. He submitted to the jurisdiction of the court by filing it here. We didn't object. It went to hearing. It was ordered. So, and it wasn't raised on the briefing either. So I think what we then look at the case itself is this is an administrative system. It's governed by statutory scheme. The statutory scheme sets the ALJ up as the finder of fact. Once that fact is found under 843, 301, 8, it's to be upheld in the appellate process unless overcome by substantial evidence. So I believe you all are familiar with that procedure and that standard. City of Loveland case cited in my brief talks about what is substantial evidence, and it's defined as probative, credible, competent evidence that would warrant a reasonable belief that the evidence of a particular fact is appropriate. And it doesn't matter if there's contradictory evidence. And so when you look at the test itself, you keep in mind that the judge, as the finder of fact, is presumed to have considered all of the relevant evidence, weighed it, decided what's relevant, what isn't. He weighs the evidence, he determines credibility, he resolves conflict, he or she, and the need to cite the contrary evidence is not a requirement. In this factual findings, several of the points raised by claimant's counsel were in fact cited to by the judge, either in other findings or in the conclusions themselves, disregarded, and the judge went the way that she did. Claimant's arguments are threefold. The first two are clearly substantial evidence tests. They are elements of the third, but he's talking and challenging whether or not the contract contemplated travel, number one, and whether or not there was a benefit to the employer, number two. First argument is based on the contemplation of travel being, well, we paid him per diem, therefore we contemplated that travel was included in the job. I don't think the argument is weak that we paid him per diem when he worked in Colorado. The evidence of where else he worked and how far away, I don't believe, is in the record, so I don't know that that's appropriate. But he did testify that in the job that he had worked for our company, separate job, same company, separate location in Carbondale, he traveled to and from his home each night. He received a $60 per diem for that job. The job in Carthage, Texas was only a $50 per diem, and he wasn't obviously living at home and commuting from Colorado to Texas. So I do think that's a valid argument to show that even though he got per diem, it doesn't mean that that was just for the travel. It was, he got it when he lived at home. The benefit of the employer argument, I think, goes to, well, I'm, as you pointed out, he's experienced. Well, there were a lot of other experienced people. As a matter of fact, the person that was driving the car on the way home from Texas when the accident occurred was an employee that worked with the claimant in Colorado for Jomex. They were both terminated when that job ended. That employee drove separately at a different time down to Texas and applied for a job in Texas. Leonardo Lasole, I think, was his name. He didn't get a job because he didn't apply on the right day, or they weren't hiring, or whatever it was. He was experienced. He had worked the previous job. He goes to Texas, doesn't get a job. This claimant travels to Texas, gets there a month before the job even starts, sits around for an entire month. We're not paying him. We didn't pay him to go to Texas. We didn't pay him mileage, meals, gas, hourly, anything, per diem, anything. He gets to Texas. He's hired in Texas for a job in Texas that he works in Texas. When the job in Texas runs out, he's let go in Texas. And 2 days later on his way home, he's injured. So the point here is that it's not contemplated within the contract because he was hired in Texas and he wasn't paid or anything special. In Texas itself, was there a specific benefit to the employer? He was not employed in the job when he was injured. He did not take his vehicle to the job. There are other people, maybe that were, or say truck drivers that had a specific skill that brought their vehicle, as some of the cases we'll talk about, that were brought to the job that benefited the employer because they had that vehicle and because they used that vehicle as part of the job. Then there may be an argument, yeah, there's a benefit here. He didn't, he rode with his brother. He didn't provide any special tools or takes tools or equipment to the job. So again, no benefit to the employer. Although he had experience, that doesn't necessarily mean it specifically benefited the employer. The guy said, well, yeah, well, you know, he had more experience than some of the other guys. Okay, given. But the judge, in weighing that against the other factors, said, well, that's not enough of a benefit to say, well, then we're going to overcome the general rule that says coming to or going from employment is not compensable. Because we've got all these other factors that were found in the order that support the opposite conclusion, that it wasn't a specific benefit to the employer. specifically 200 and something people there for 150 jobs or 70 jobs or something like that, well more than what they needed. There were employees from the local area, there were employees from other states, there were employees from other jobs. I think there was testimony that one other employer down there, not Joe Max, had just finished a job. So there were lots of people from that job that were milling around there and looking for employment.
Mr. Spahr, can I ask you a question on a different issue, and that's travel status.
Yes,
so do you agree that while he was working at Joe Max, he was on travel status while he was receiving his per diem?
No.
And why would that be?
Because travel status, and that's my next point, so I'll just jump right to that. The general rule is that coming to, going from under Mountain, Madden versus Mountain West, the Supreme Court case, not compensable. It gives four exceptions. Three of them don't apply here. So the only one that does apply is whether the travel was contemplated by the employer. It's variable number three under the Madden case. And travel status is within that third variable. So if you are hired here and sent there, such as in the Hearst case, where they were hired in one state, transported to another state, out of state, travel status, didn't have their own vehicles, had to use the company vehicle, using the company vehicle after hours to go get their laundry done, injured on the way back to the job. It's during the time from hire to termination, it's in a company vehicle, not a personal vehicle, and they were specifically transported to the state, out of state. Here, you don't have that. The guy was hired in Texas. He was not hired here and sent there. He was terminated in Texas. And there's clear testimony that, yeah, he did work for this company several different times over a two-year period. He would work for a while, and then they would be terminated. He, at that point, is free to work for anyone else. And many people, I think there was testimony, did. They'd work for Joe Max for a while, then they'd go work for Hensel Phelps or someone else. And 6 months later, a year later, when a job queued up, they would come back. And Joe Max has more than one job working at a time. So they might go from here to there or go to another carrier company or whatever. So just the mere fact that he's out of state does not create travel status. And specifically, in the case of Decker versus U.S. Pipe, which is cited in memory, in that case, the court talked about the fact that there's not perpetual travel status even when you're out of state. In that case, the person came to Colorado from out of state, signed up on the paperwork, and was hired here. The person got a per diem to be here in Colorado working. The person chose, instead of living in the company housing, had a pet. So she lived in a town, I don't know, some distance away, and commuted to the meeting point where they were picked up and taken to the job each day, and was then injured in her commute from where she lived to the meeting point. And even though she was paid up per diem and came from out of state to work here, she signed up here, and the court said, well, we don't consider this to be travel status because you were hired here and you're traveling back and forth to the meeting point, which is coming and going from work, not travel status. In the Phillips versus Hearst case that is relied on in the dissent, and it's one in which they held that there was travel status involved, it's clearly distinguishable because in that case the person was hired in Texas, as I said, transported to Colorado by the employer in the company vehicle. He's doing his laundry, driving the company vehicle back, and is injured. Here, we don't have him hired and moved here. He went to Texas, he was hired there, he was terminated there. And again, the Lasoli situation is the perfect example of that guy traveled clear to Texas. He'd been here too. He thought he'd get a job. He didn't. When he turned around and came home in that same car and was injured, is he on travel status? He was told that, you know, our next job is going to be down in Texas. He went down there thinking he'd get a job. He didn't get a job. So now is he travel status? He can't be. He never even was hired.
And Mr. Spahr, I understand that you're stating there's no travel status here. If it were a case where there was travel status, once it's triggered, does the duty of the employer to award benefits continue until that person gets home?
Normally, I think the way we're looking at travel status normally is an individual is hired. And in the course and scope of his employment, he's asked to travel while he's an employee of the company. So from when he leaves to when he comes home, arguably absent a detour, that person is in travel status. But I don't think that's a situation here where it's either before you're hired or after you're let go. That's not what travel status was designed to do, to say anybody that drives from anywhere to go to a job and then gets the job And then Wirtz, well, on his way home to wherever that may be, is now in travel status. It's not that broad.
Are you aware of any authorities that address that precise issue?
I don't believe so, because I believe the majority of the trial cases, at least the ones I was looking at here, talked about an individual who was hired and then asked to travel as part of his job. And see, here, we never asked him to travel. He chose to go to Texas. Had he not gone, okay, there were 220 other people there that could have been hired. He wasn't ordered to go. He wasn't paid to go. He wasn't given any special consideration to go. Most of these cases that find a travel status situation, the person is given some kind of a special consideration to go. The case that he cited in the street, the Thompson case, the individual's working for the company. He's from Wisconsin. He's working in Iowa or somewhere. During the course of working, they say, hey, we got this job in Colorado we'd like you to do. So he hops in his truck and comes to Colorado. Okay, well, in that case, they said, oh, by the way, we'll pay you 30 cents a mile to go there. And then when you get there with your truck that we need you to use in the job, we'll pay you to use your truck. And so when he's driving and using his truck in the job, he has an incident and an accident. He's driving someone to get clothing for their job. So they said, well, that's travel status, because all of these considerations led them to say that this was a significant part of the job and travel was considered a part of the job. We don't have any of that here. Didn't have his own vehicle, didn't pay him to get there, didn't pay him time to travel there, didn't pay him any expenses to travel there. We just paid him per diem while he lived there. Now, it's a totally different case. What happens if this man is in Texas and working in Texas and driving back and forth from the job site in Texas and has an injury? Is he a traveling employee then? Well, I don't know. He lives in Texas. He's working in Texas. He's driving back and forth to the job. I guess we'd have to look at Texas law on that one. But that wasn't what happened here. He'd already been terminated because the job was over for the non-skilled individuals. So because of that, there's no travel status. It wasn't a job where he was, this is the key, it wasn't a job where he was hired here and sent there. It was a job where he went there, was hired there, and it ended there. And that, if you read through Hurst, and you read through Birch, and you read through Thompson, that's the key distinguishing factor as I see it. And the judge made the findings to support these conclusions that she made, and to support following the general rule that coming and going is not compensable. Are there other questions?
We have that same situation, or in this case, let's say that Mr. Gutierrez Salazar was hired in Colorado and asked to go to Texas and was on travel status, but then while in Texas he was terminated. Is he in travel status to get back home?
He may as well have been.
Even though he's terminated there.
Even though he's terminated there because he was specifically being there was
right.
Part of the job.
Right.
We're going to hire you here. The example would be the Hurst case. We're going to hire you here. We're going to throw you all in the van, and we're going to ship you up to Durango to work on this road crew. And when the job is done in Durango, we're driving you home in the van, and the van wrecks. Job's over, but you're still in travel status because the transportation is being provided by the employer. The travel is at the behest of the employer and is part of the job, where here it isn't. And he, as you pointed out, Judge, he was free when he left to stay in Texas, to jump over to Oklahoma, go to another job, to do whatever he may have chosen to do. He wasn't specifically, well, we took you there, we're going to bring you back, and when you get back, then you're done. That's the difference. Other questions? Okay, I would conclude then, judges, by saying that there's clearly substantial evidence to support the findings that were made. Just because he has some contrary evidence he wants to raise, that's not sufficient to overcome it on appeal. The findings do justify the conclusions that the general rule does apply and that the exceptions don't. And the ICAO even pointed out that it's a fact-specific determination of whether an exception applies. So if the judge looks at it and says, under these facts, I don't think the exception applies, then that should be upheld. Thank you for your time.
I will concede that there's conflicting evidence supporting the benefit, and therefore it's supported by substantial evidence. However, there is no evidence at all to support a finding that the per diem was quote-unquote merely as additional compensation. because the employer admitted that he was paying a per diem to compensate the employee for travel expenses. And you can say that he didn't pay for the hotel, and he didn't pay for the car, he didn't pay for the gas, he didn't pay for the food, but he paid him $50 a day, which was almost half of his wages, to compensate for travel expenses. So if it cannot be gainsaid that the employment contract did not contemplate travel if you're paying him to compensate for travel expenses. And that's why the question is misplaced. Was he on travel status when he went out there? Once he got there and he decided to pay him to compensate him for travel expenses, travel status was triggered, and it does not end until you get home. You can insulate yourself by terminating the employee. You're on the hook until you get home, unless there's a substantial deviation.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate both of your arguments. They will be helpful to us in rendering an opinion, and this matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.